So Buddha didn't say anything about God. He's one of the chief disciples, Ananda, towards the very end of his days, during the Parinirvana time. Buddha was reclining under the tree and Ananda was standing there with a little sad face. Buddha looked at him and said, "Ananda, what do you mean by that? You seem to be unhappy. Is it because I'm leaving the body?" He said, "No, sir, that I know." He had taught us that the soul is immortal. The body comes and goes. It's only nothing but a recreation vehicle. You get in, use it for some time, junk it, get another one. Yeah, new model every time. It's very true. At least I'm giving an example of a little expensive item. Bhagavad Gita talks about a shirt. Take off the torn out shirt and put a new shirt. That is what death and birth. I'm making it a little expensive. So Ananda said, "No, I'm not sad about that." "Oh, then why? What's wrong with you?" "Sir, one doubt was lurking in me all this time. And I didn't dare to ask you. But if I don't ask you now, it will still be with me. I don't know how I can get over with that. And you are the only one who could answer. Tell me. Don't worry. Sir, you never talked about God. Does it mean that you deny God?" He looked at Ananda. "Ananda, did I ever deny God?" "No, sir, you didn't say anything." "So that means you approve God." Again looked, "Ananda, did I ever approve God?" He answered through another question. He neither denied nor approved. What does that mean? It is something beyond putting it in words. So when you cannot talk about it, why to talk? "So then what should I do, sir?" "Just do what I say. Do the right thing." As my master Swami Sivanandji summarized it in a tablet form, he said, "Do good, be good." That's all the essence of God. Essence of religion. Be good and do good. Very simple. Follow the right thing, right thoughts, right actions. Find out the cause for your troubles, your sufferings, your ignorance. You are the cause for it. Find out the cause, remove it. Stay away from that. You have no suffering. Your mind becomes clean. Then what, sir? "Don't ask me. You do this first. Then you will know what happens to yourself." So almost like he's saying, "Go, get some sugar, get some flour, get some butter, put them together, mix it nicely, and then put it in the oven. And then, sir, what will happen?" "Don't really do this. What should I do with it? Maybe I'll add one more. Cut a piece and put it in your mouth when it's cool. Then, sir, should I tell you? You enjoy the taste of it. I can only tell you where to get things, how to prepare. I mean, ingredients, the recipes, how to make it. Then you have to make it and not only stop there, put it in your mouth, then I don't have to tell you how tasty it is. You will know it yourself." That is what Buddha did, Patanjali did. They are very intelligent people. They somehow started talking about it and created more confusion. At the same time they say it's nothing, it's something that you cannot talk about. And I don't know why they started talking about it. That's because we are all talkative people, we have to talk of something. If we want to talk about what we can do, what we should do, and then leave the final thing for experience. Patanjali did the same thing. That's what we call yoga. Yoga is something very, very, very practical. There's nothing much of a theory in it at all. It's all practice. Vivekananda said that clearly. We don't have to blindly believe somebody. So and so said it. No. He said it, fine. It's of no good to you. You have to experience. That means you do it. Now, coming to the very essence of yoga. What are we expected to do in the name of yoga? Certainly, all the Ashtanga, they call it. Eight steps. Ashtanga yoga. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi you don't do. It just happens. You cannot say, I am getting into Samadhi. I am experiencing Samadhi. Some people say that also. I just laugh at them. It's almost like, hey, look at that. I am experiencing a deep sleep now. If I say that I am experiencing deep sleep and I expect you to believe in me, Samadhi is something that you cannot talk of. It just happens. It's an experience. So all the seven steps are there to take you gently towards that experience. Step by step, step by step. Yama begins with your perfection, ethical perfection, your observances within you. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not lie. It's all you, you, you. You don't have to do anything with somebody else. Ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, parigraha. Then the niyama, something to do with the outside people also. Your attitude with the outside world. These are the literal foundations for yoga. This alone will raise you 99% to the yogic state. Great Mahatma, the world-renowned figure, Mahatma Gandhi. He simply applied 2 of the 10 Yamaniyamas. The 10 points of Yamaniyama, out of that, just 2. Ahimsa and Satya. Truth and non-violence. He just applied these 2 in his life. And he became recognized all over the world as a great Mahatma, the super soul, Mahatma. He himself admits that. All I know is just honesty and non-violence. That's my policy. I'm trying to observe that. What a little section, proportionately, from the entire yogic principle. He practiced only a little bit and he became great Mahatma. And if you practice all that, imagine how big you can become. That's why these Yama Niyama must be a foundation. We should always remember that in our life. Without that, all the yoga is just gymnastics, circus feats. You can do all kinds of beautiful hatha yoga, 200, 300, 400 asanas. Ringling Brothers. Ringling Brothers, you know Ringling Brothers? Circus. They do much more bending. Our yoga should not stop here. I'm not saying this is no good. Please understand me. It's all right, but let us not stop there. And say, because you do 300, 400 asana poses, you call yourself a yogi. Not enough. You are just stepping into, that's all. Ethical perfection by Yama Niyama. Physical perfection by Hatha Yoga, particularly asana. Asana takes care of the physical body. Then the next body is the vital body, body of prana. That is taken care of by pranayama, the regulation of the breath. Pranayama means to regulate the breathing. Controlled breathing, not stopping the breath. Holding the breath is not pranayama. Hold it a little, all right. Regulation. If you think that holding the breath is pranayama and will make you yogi, well, you can quickly become a big yogi if you hold long. Pranayama, ayama means regulation, controlled breathing. Still more deeply speaking, it is the synthesis of the prana and apana. Pranapana samayuktaha, says Bhagavad Gita. The upgoing and the downgoing vital energies should be compromised there, balanced. And they use different core terms for that. Shiva and Shakti, Aikya. The union of Shiva Shakti. Pranapana samayuktaha. Even Buddhism talks about, in Burmese Buddhist practice, they call it Appanapana Sati. It's the same thing, it's a colloquial Sanskrit version. So you are regulating the vital body, balancing the vital body. Balance the body, physical body by asana, balance the vital body by pranayama, and then balance the senses by pratyahara. It's not sense control completely. One of the great Siddha, by name Thirumular, talks about it. Aindum adakku adakku enbar arivilar. Aindum adakkil asedanamavar. He says, aindu means five senses. People say, control the five senses, control the five senses. Controlling doesn't mean you stop them from functioning. If you do that, you become dead. They say, instead, regulate them. Discipline them. Let your eye listen to you. Let your tongue listen to you. Yes, it was a nice pie. How about a second serving? You obey the tongue, or the tongue obeys you. Very important. That is what you call pratyahara. Let the senses obey you. your eyes, your tongue, your nose, your speech, discipline it, balance it. There's balance, balance, balance in every level. After pratyahara, now begin to balance the mind, dharana. To balance the mind, first train that to concentrate on one thing. Dharana means to teach the mind to stick to one thing. Of course, as soon as you begin dharana, it doesn't stick to one thing. You begin to, you want the mind to be staying in one place, it runs in 10 places. Particularly when you really want that mind to be in one place, only then it decides to go out somewhere. Other times it seems to be all very obedient, nice, gentle. It's natural. You leave a pet at home freely, it will be innocent. It will be just roaming around, sleeping on every couch and everywhere, no problems whatsoever. Suppose you expect a special visitor and you don't want this to go and jump on his lap and lick his face. So you that day decide to tie him somewhere in a corner. You made a terrible mistake. Why? It will break the hell of the house. It will shout and shout and shout, and you cannot even have a single minute with your special guest. Why? It says, all these days you let me roam around freely, today you are tying me? How dare you are! Let me out. That is what you are doing when you do dharana. All the time you just let your monkey mind go, roam around as it wants, you follow it. Thayumanavar says, Kadum karayum manakkurangu kalvittoda odundolilal payanodado. Lord, my monkey simply drags me all over the jungle and I am following the monkey. How long I should do it? All the sages and saints had this problem in the beginning. Don't give up. Many people who want to practice meditation, they go sit there, and as soon as they see the mind running here and there, oh, it's not for me. Give up and go away. Never do that. The mind wants you to do that, so that it can always be in the upper hand. It will be the boss. But here, you are turning the tide the other way. You be the boss. You want to make your mind your servant. It takes a lot of training. Even a puppy is not trained one day. It takes a long time. You take it to the bad dog company. You pay thousands of dollars to train a little puppy. And to train this puppy here, takes long, long time. So don't give up. Practice dharana. Then once you are fixing the mind continues a little longer, it's only at that point you are supposed to be meditating, dhyana. People who call themselves meditators, they don't meditate right away. They simply learn to concentrate. And then slowly concentration leads you to meditation. And then if you fix the mind, if you have achieved that, putting the mind in one place and stay there, you are in deep meditation. And that is all you can do. You cannot go any further. Why? Because the next step happens by itself. And your mind gets fixed, slowly it gets dissolved in a way. It loses its hold on you. It lets you transcend and just go. And it It's not you there, the normal you has mind. There is a different you there. That you is very different from this you. So we always have double you in us. And that's what you call samadhi. There you experience your true nature, your blissful state, your peaceful state. In that, you don't have to go and see God somewhere. You will know what God is. You will be surprised to know that you are that already. You don't have to go somewhere looking for God. The one, the looker for God, himself or herself is God. It's even to say himself and herself is not there, because you are not you, male or female there. You are pure spirit. You are simply in a body, masculine body or feminine body. You are neither male nor female. You don't even claim 50-50 equality. It's all in a different level, the physical level. In the spiritual level, there is no 50-50, it's only 100%. All are equal. The moment you get the glimpse of that, the moment you realize who you are really, then your perception changes completely. You begin to see everything, everybody, as the expression of the same spirit. They may look differently outside, superficially, physically, but they are all made of the same essence, spirit. Then you learn to love everything and everybody as you would love yourself. That is the saying, love thy neighbor as thyself. Thyself, not as Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so. You have to love your neighbor as your own self. How would you love your neighbor as your own self if you do not know who your own self is? So the solution is, know yourself, then see yourself in himself, and love himself as yourself. So even to love your neighbor as yourself, it should begin within you by knowing yourself. That's why it's not only the charity that begins at home. Everything begins at home. You see the whole world from your standpoint. If you identify yourself as a physical being, you only see the physical side of the things outside. You see the physical persons, physical things. If you put yourself in the mental level, you see the mind of the people. You forget about their bodies. You think how great they are, how intelligent they are. Is he a poet? Is he a professor? Is he a singer? You don't worry about their bodies. If you are a singer, you would like everybody to be a singer. You see the intelligence. But spirit is further up, beyond. So in the spiritual level, you are able to see everybody as spirit. That way, you become the whole. You are not a separate entity anymore. Purnamatha, purnamidham. Purnat, purnamudachyade. A very old prayer in the Upanishads, in the Vedas. That is full and this is also full. This fullness came out of that fullness. Even though this fullness came out of that fullness ever remains full. Even if we can't go to that level, at least we will know we are all one in spirit, expressing as many. That is the ultimate goal behind yoga. In a way, it's slowly happening that way. As a globetrotter, I see the whole world coming together, forgetting their differences in the name of yoga. The time has come. Do you think about 20, 30 years back, if you are asked to come to listen to a Swami, a yogi, talking about yoga, you would have laughed at all these things. Now the time has come. Everywhere, people from China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Far East, Near East, that's the greatness of yoga. So let us get more and more and more involved in it. Let that yogic spirit, yogic light, shine in our very lives. An example is worth than many books or many lectures. Let us just live that life. It is to think of these things and to elevate our lives. We gather in the name of this congresses and other things. I'm really delighted to see all of you. They have come and we are going to have a wonderful time together. And then you go out. I'm sure they will see you a little more beautiful, brilliant and bright. And it's your faces that are going to inspire many, many hundreds and thousands. I wish you all success. And I thank you for having given me this great privilege of sitting in front of you and to share these few words. And I hope I will be able to serve you more for the coming few days. Thank you. Om Shanti.